Hey everybody, Nate here. Before the show, I just wanted to take a minute to talk about our sponsor, the Snack Nanny. The Snack Nanny is the latest, greatest spill-proof bowl. It's the first snack bowl for kids with a self-closing door. The Snack Nanny allows kids to snack freely without overeating, keeps kids entertained, and prevents them from creating a mess for mom and dad to clean up. Kids and parents love the Snack Nanny. It's easy to use, easy to clean, and includes portion control features that only the Snack Nanny offers. To order, go to www.snacknanny.com. or order from Amazon. Remember, you support our sponsors and they support us. Thanks and Nihei Debiru. Hey everybody, and welcome back to Chop Talk. This is your host, Nate England. Today's episode is part 3 of my interview with Travis Voles, and in today's show we keep talking about my time in Okinawa and how I got into the various dojos that I worked out in while I was over there. Hope you enjoy. Thanks.
Shinzato was sort of completely different. So he was always trying to figure out why you do something, how to make it better, and how to move your body to make it more efficient and how to make the block stronger and all this. So he was constantly sort of tweaking and modifying and not necessarily the kata itself, but like how you move. He's trying to figure out how you move and what's the best way to move and most efficient way to move. And where these other guys were just sort of, this is the way we do it and we're going to continue doing it this exact way. And so what we're doing with Shiryu was sort of in the middle. And so... I was able to sort of go both directions with it. We were lucky to get the opportunity to do that. In fact, it doesn't happen very much where you're able to work out at two different karate schools at the same time, especially in Okinawa, because in Okinawa, everybody knows everybody in Okinawa. It is a small place and they all talk. So I remember I was out at the guys from Miyahira's dojo invited me out to the end of the year party, and this must have been the end of 2008, I want to say. I went back, yeah, end of 2008. So I hadn't been working out with them for a long time, a few months, but I'd of course worked out with Shinzato for the 6 months before, and then once I came back after California as well. And so I was sitting around at this table, and there's, you know, me and all these other guys have been in karate for, you know, 70 years. And I'm not really exaggerating on some of those. There's a bunch of guys that are, you know, 8th, 9th, 10th degree black belts all sitting around. They're having dinner, and I'm there, and I'm, you know, doing my best, speaking Japanese, and they're, some of them speak English. But the one guy who's a 10th degree black belt looks at me and says, You work out Miyahira Dojo? And I'm like, yes, sir, I do. You name Nato? And I'm like, yes, sir, I'm Nate. You work Shinzato Dojo? I'm like, yes, sir, I do. Why you work out two dojo? Oh, God, crap. You know? So I was shocked that, one, he knew who I was, and two, he knew where I was working out. Like I said, everybody talks. So people knew who I was.
So were they actually fine with that, or?
Here's how I answered. I'm like, well, yes, sir. When I first came to Okinawa, you know, Shinzato Sensei he sort of took me in. You know, he's the first person I worked out with. I went to his dojo. He let me train with him. And then when I came back to Okinawa, he introduced me to Miyahira's dojo as well, because he wanted to show me like traditional Okinawan karate, or the original Okinawan karate. And so then he wanted me to work out there to learn the traditional. But I still work out with him as well. He's like, ah, yes. This is very good. You must always work out with your first sensei. This is good. And I'm like, oh, okay. So that was their philosophy. If you started with one guy and then you went and worked out with another guy, we still need to go back to the other guy. And so, because everybody knew about it, that was okay.
Sorry. Made an exception.
Yeah, it made the exception. But if I had started working out with these other guys and not told anybody, that would have been an issue. That would have been a big problem. You know, so if I, you know, sneaking out, you know, I was working out with Shinzato on the side, then that wouldn't have been okay.
And how'd you find Johto?
Johto, I had done a little Johto in the U.S. Grandmaster Trias had a guy who had lived in Japan for a while and studied sword and studied Johto. And so when he came back, he had him teach the other students. So, you know, Mr. Awad learned some, and, you know, my first teacher, Joe Walker, had learned some. And so then, you know, Sensei Walker, when he got back to Peoria, he kept teaching the sword class. So he taught the sword class what they had learned from this guy, from Grandmaster Treatise's dojo. And then, you know, he taught a couple, like once a month or something, he would teach a special class. For a few months, this was Johto. So he taught sort of the basic strikes for Johto, like the first, you know, four or five, and then they taught one kata. And then that was sort of it. You know, I kept working on that stuff, so I kept that kata so I could run it, and I kept working on the basic strikes, but there sort of wasn't any more information out there. There wasn't any more information available. It's just not very well known, even in Japan, it's not really well known. And so, when I went to Japan to live, that was one of my goals, was to find someone who taught Johto and get to practice a little bit and work out a little bit with it. And so when I first went to Japan, I was in mainland Japan, so I was staying in Kyoto for a while, and then I had the JR Rail Pass, so I was able to go all around the country. Then I was in Tokyo for about a month, living at the Kodokan, which is the World Judo headquarters, and I was trying to find Johto, and I couldn't. I mean, there was just nothing. I just couldn't find anything. And so I kind of gave up. I'm like, well, I'm not going to find it. So I'm going down to Okinawa. I'm going to stay in Okinawa, and there's not going to be any Johto in Okinawa. So I just kind of give up, and I'll do Okinawa weapons or do whatever I can find down there. And so I get down to Okinawa, and I was supposed to meet this one Kabuto teacher, Yogi. He supposedly taught classes at the Okinawa Budokan, which is like the martial arts center. There's this big sort of gymnasium. It's like there's three levels of karate dojos all on top of each other, and they're huge. They're like I said, it's the size of a gym on each level. The top level is matted, so you can do all the judo and throwing and stuff there. And then they have another actual enormous, like, sort of gymnasium slash assembly hall slash amphitheater on another side too, and they have weight room, workout room, and everything. And it's all built by the prefecture. The government built all this whole thing for all the martial arts stuff. And supposedly, he taught in the mornings there. He taught Okinawan Kabuto. Well, I went there and tried to find him, and he wasn't around. And I tried to talk to people there, and my non-existent Japanese at the time, and nobody knew anything about it, and so I was able to start talking to the staff that was working there, and so I was trying to, you know, I'm looking for, you know, Yogi Sensei, he does Okinawan Kabuto, and I don't know who this guy is. I'm like, okay, so, you know, what, so I was trying to ask, you know, what sort of martial arts do you have? And so, they had sumo, you know, but that's for little kids, and they had like some like full contact karate class, and I'm like, I'm interested in that. And they talk about this other stuff, they had aikido, I'm like, and so it was kind of kendo, and I'm like, okay, and then I was like, okay, well, thanks. And so I started walking away. Oh, we have Johto. Like, oh, "What? Oh, yes, we have Jodo." I'm like, "Oh, okay."
Happy to get in Chuck E. Cheese then.
Well, I'm like, "Oh, well, that sounds interesting. When do they, you know, when do they work out?" I'm like, "Ima." I'm like, "What? Ima? Now, now. They work out now." I'm like, I'm looking around like, "What? What? Nikai, second floor. You go second floor." I'm like, "Oh, all right." Here we go. So I go up. And there they are. There's three guys doing Jodo. It was Ikeda-san, who I wound up working out with a ton. Just a ton. He was teaching the class that day. And then the guy whose name I had a second ago and now escaped me, who we worked out together quite a bit, and we got promoted together each time. And then another older guy who was a big into karate. He was like a 9th or 10th degree black belt in karate and some other style of karate. And he was working out there too. So I come in, I see this. Oh, wow. So I can see that. And I sit down and I start watching. And I was there at about, this is probably about 9:30, maybe 10 o'clock in the morning. So I sit down and start watching. Figure, oh, they're going to be done. You know, they'll be done like a half hour. And a half hour went by. I'm like, oh, we'll be done at 11 o'clock. And sort of 11 o'clock went by. I'm like, oh, we'll be done at noon. And so noon rolled around. So I wound up sitting there for about 2 hours watching these guys. And then their sort of class had finished. And so then I went up and was trying to talk to them. And no one, of course, speaks English. And I don't speak Japanese. I'm like, Jodo desu ka? Are you guys doing Jodo? Oh, yes, Jodo, you know. I'm like, I know a little bit. And they're, let me see. So I went out and I did sort of the few basic strikes that I knew, and I tried to run the kata. I got like, I don't know. And they said, it looks like Kabuto, looks like Okinawan Kabuto. I'm like, okay. And so, and then Ikeda-san, who knew the most English, goes, you want to practice Jodo? I'm like, yeah. He's like, you come back. Next week, next Monday, you come. You come 10 o'clock, you come. I'm like, all right. And so I came back that next Monday, a week later, and still hadn't found Yogi, the guy who's teaching Kabuto by this time. Couldn't find him. So I came back the next Monday, and the class is bigger. There's, I don't know, like 10 or 12 people there this time. I don't know if the week before was a holiday or something like that. And there's different teacher. So the guy who was running the class the first time I saw it was now one of the students. So he's one of the senior students, but he's one of the students. And so two other guys were running class. And so I jumped in there and I was working out with them, and they gave me a couple of basic strikes and sent me off to the side. And I worked on that for basically the entire class period. So just the first strike. And then at a certain point they decided I was okay on that one. So they came back and taught me the second strike. So I worked on that for the whole 2 hours. And then, and so after that, Fukuhara sensei, who's one of the two guys running classes, kind of said through one of the people who spoke a little bit of English, says, you want to continue practicing Jodo? I'm like, yeah. You come to Fukuhara sensei dojo. It in this house. You come, you practice Jodo. I'm like, oh, wow. All right. So I got an invite to go to his house. And so that's pretty much where I worked out for the most part. So they had once a week they'd have the get together at the Budokan, where everybody would come together, and then Fukuhara sensei would have workouts at his house. And so I wound up doing that.
So that wasn't all the students kind of invite thing, or?
No, yeah, it wasn't. He had a small group that he worked out with at his house, and then Takeda had another group and they worked out some evenings. And so there was another kind of group. And so they would all try to come together on Mondays or for special events, like once a month. Everybody would come together. But for the most part, yeah, I'd work out at his house. And so it was great because Monday we'd work out at the Budokan together with everybody. And then Tuesday I'd work out at Fukuhara Sensei's dojo. Wednesday, I think Thursday we had off, Friday and Saturday. So you're working out 4 or 5 days a week. You know, with a lot of personal attention. I mean, there's some 2 or 3 or 4 or 5 people in this class at most. Usually there's only about 3 people, 3 or 4 people in the class. You know, me, Fukuhara-sensei, and Ikeda. San. And then, you know, some other people too sometimes. But that's who was always there. And so class would start at 10 o'clock. But of course, you know, you get there at 9:30 and start working out, or 9 and start working out. And then class would end at noon. But then, you know, I'd stay, me and Akeda-san, sometimes a couple other people would stay for an hour or 2 hours after class. So you're talking about every time you go to work out, 5 days a week, you're working out for, you know, you're figuring about approximately four hours, give or take. And so that adds up pretty quick. And so I got a, you know, it was a great experience. So I was lucky he sort of took me in.
Do you still have contact with any of your teachers from Okinawa?
Oh, yeah. I exchange emails with Shinzato every once in a while about, you know, different stuff. He had me write a couple papers about sort of my experience and sort of my analysis of his karate. And then Fukuhara-sensei, a couple of the students that came in later, they speak English pretty well, so I sort of talked to him through them. And then... And again, one of those students, Miwa Kanazawa, is a good friend of mine, and she helped me out a bunch as well. She worked at the same high school that I worked at, and so she was a teacher, and I was a teacher there. We were in the same office, so she helped me out there, and then she does Goju-ryu karate, so she introduced me to her sensei, and I worked out with him a couple of times. And then she started doing Jodo as well. And then one of the members of Miyahira's dojo is a teacher at the same high school as well. So she's kind of a good contact person. So if I need to get a hold of Miyahira's dojo, I talk to her, and she kind of relays the message to the other teacher, and they kind of relay it back and forth. So I'm still in contact. I was there last December and worked out with everybody. Hopefully I'll be able to get back over and visit them again. So, yeah. Sound fun?
Yeah, I'd definitely like to make it there one day. It's just finances and time and...
It is. It's tough. But it's one of those things.
Makes it worth it how bad you want it, you know?
Yeah, exactly right. Just kind of have to decide if that's something you want to do, and then sort of kind of make a plan of action on how to do it. You know, if money's the issue, putting together the money, and you know, not everybody can kind of do what I did, which is basically quit my job and give up everything and go. But you know, you can get over there for, you know, you can get over there for a week or 2 weeks, and you know, who knows, you know. There's different ways of doing it. And that was another fun thing, is you could always, when I was living over there, you could always spot the different karate people. You know, because it's always these kind of burly middle-aged guys with mustaches walking around with karate t-shirts on. So, well, those are karate guys. So you go up and you talk to them, and you know, you can kind of make friends.
So was it a good proportion of the population over there, karate people, or...
No, you would be shocked about how many people don't know anything about it. Like, people who...
And it's all around them.
People who were born in Okinawa, grew up in Okinawa, their family's been from Okinawa for generations, have no idea that that's where karate's from.
Wow.
I remember this one woman.
That's very
really?
Interesting.
I thought it's from Tokyo. Why are you not in Tokyo? What? Talking about Tokyo. I'm in Okinawa. That's where karate's from. Karate's from Okinawa? And they're like, yes! Yes, lady!
So was there like a lot of dojos around there? Or like, were they advertised like signs outside? Or did you...
It's not a lot of commercial over there. It's... a lot of them kind of frown on that. So if you're making your living off of karate, a lot of people sort of frown on that. Not to say that they should or shouldn't, but that's just sort of the way
it is. So they might just happen to frown on a lot of the proportion of karate around here.
Well, you know, I don't know. It's mixed. I mean, there definitely are guys who make their living. Like I said, Higa Ono has this huge global organization, and so do a bunch of other people that do. But then there's a lot that don't, and so the Shinzato and a bunch of other guys wrote an encyclopedia of Okinawan karate, and it's only in Japanese so far, but it's a great book. It's just thick book, and it's all about the history of Okinawan karate and all the how it developed and all the practitioners and everything. And they got everybody together. They did really good research, and they got it together. And I think they found that there was something like 300 dojos, karate dojos in Okinawa. And just think about how tiny of a space that is. You know, Okinawa is about 90 miles long from tip to tip, and it's, you know, between 2 and at the widest 15 miles wide. So it's a skinny little strip, and most of the people live in the southern half.
There's a lot of these people, like, for instance, that lady you were talking about, the people just walk around passing up dojos all the time and not even realizing.
Yeah, absolutely. Because if you can't read Japanese, the signs are in Japanese, and they're down these, like, back. If I would have never found Miyahira's dojo in a million years. If you said, I'll give you $10 million. Here's the name of this dojo, go find it, and set me loose in Okinawa. I would have never found it. It is down this back alley, you turn right on this dead end, you go down to but before you cross this old rickety bridge, you go to left, and it's down this street, and then there's the dojo with a faded out sign that's hidden behind a bush, and there it is. And if someone didn't take you there, you're not going to find it.
They probably like it like that.
Yeah, they do. And so they're small. I mean, a lot of them are, you know, similar sort of size and dynamic of Mr. Awad's dojo. There's not a ton of people. Everyone who's there, you know, they want them there. And that's sort of the way it is. And like I said, a lot of them are in people's houses, on the first floor of people's houses, or Shinzato's was above his office, or and they're just hard to find.
That's how Sensei McLean said his dojo is in Tennessee. He was telling me, he's like, he's like, you can come on out. He's like, you can sleep in the dojo if you want. I'm kind of like, give him this look. He's like, well, the dojo's attached right to my house.
It's traditional. That's how it was, you know. There's not a lot of them, you know, that are in shopping centers over there. But I mean, just think about the sort of the density of that. I mean, there's a whole bunch of people. I mean, there's just a ton of really good karate people in a really, really small area there. You know, the population's, you know, 1.25 million, something like that. So it's about the same as Cincinnati area. But they're just, yeah, they're hard to find. They're hard to find, even though there's so many of them. So how about you? What's the next step? Man, you got your blue belt last week. This week.
Just keep doing what I'm doing. Keep getting the knowledge. The belts aren't really what's important to me. It's the knowledge that comes with it.
Yeah.
But the belts kind of simulate, you know, make people want to teach me more.
Sure.
You know, so that's kind of just advancement. But really, the knowledge is the important thing. I really care much about the belts. But
yeah, and that's good. It's a good way of looking at it. Yeah. Just sort of, you know, keep getting better. Whatever belt you have.
Yeah, the knowledge is the important thing. No one can take that.
Yeah.
It's with me.
I remember this lady telling me, in Shion Walker School, they have, they had sort of like two intermediate belts before yellow belt. Kind of help encourage people to go. So some of the other Shuriryu schools do that too. But the first official Shuriryu belt's yellow. But they had like a yellow or orange belt and a gold belt. And I remember I was teaching this woman like this basic, and I'm trying to teach her, you know, I'm doing the best I can, teaching her all the punches and kicks, and she kind of looks at me and goes, you know, they're going to do a review for orange belt later this week. I'm like, oh yeah, so you got to make sure you get all these down. It's like, if I don't pass, I'm just going to quit, because I just want to get my orange belt.
That's the attitude.
Like, fuck fuck you, lady. You know what? And I'm like, why am I even going to bother? You know, why am I going to bother teaching? In fact, I didn't. I grabbed one of the other, like, the guys who's helping. He's like a brown belt or something, but he's helping teaching class. I'm like, hey, you know, TJ, come over and teach this lady here. You know, I'm going to go work out with someone who wants to learn.
Yeah, exactly.
You know? So he'll do a fine job. He'll help you out. But yep. I'm not going to fucking waste my time. And so, yeah, I mean, in Japan and Okinawa, a lot of them don't have the colored belts. You go either from white belt to black belt, or if you're lucky, sometimes there's a brown belt in between.
Yeah.
And that's it. They don't have, or the judo people I saw, like at the Kodokan, all the adults would only wear white belts. They go white, brown, black, because they thought the color belts were for kids. You know, little kids wear color belts. You're like a kid. If you wear a yellow belt, you're like a kid. It's different in the U.S. and it's okay.
I wonder what their outlooks and what are on the MMA and the all that stuff. I wonder what their outlooks and their opinions are.
Yeah, that's a good question. I heard that the judo people really frown on it, and if anybody from their organization does it, they're out, they're booted. But there was one guy who sort of got permission to fight in the. What's the Japanese one? It's close. Pride. Is it Pride?
I think so.
Yeah. Is it Pride or one?
I think that's one.
It was one of the things where it is organized by the Japanese. So he got special permission from the Kodokan to fight in this and not be booted from their organization. But everybody else, I don't know. It'd be interesting. I'll have to see if I can talk to some people from over there. And yeah.
That's
hard. Got some people I might be able to talk to. All right, man. I'm running low on batteries. Anything else that you want to touch on before?
I don't believe so.
Yeah.
Of course, there's so much knowledge and so much conversation we could have about it, you know. But
save it
for days.
Save it for episode 2. You know, we can sort of focus. Like I said, this is sort of just trying to figure out how everything's going to go. We've got about. An hour and 15 minutes a tape now.
Nice, that went quick.
Yeah, it did. So I can chop it up and start figuring out how to assemble it. Maybe make it into a couple 3 episodes. Maybe, I don't know, maybe just chop down to 1. Maybe it's 1. I don't know.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. But thanks for coming over. Thanks for talking to me. Yeah. And I think it was real good and real productive.
Covered some ground.
Yeah. Hopefully, I wanted to talk to you and I wanted to droning on about a bunch of my crap for a while, so hopefully you're not too bored. But all right, thanks a lot.
All right, you're welcome.
All right, we'll do it again soon.
All right,
and that does it for my interview with Travis Voles. I'd like to thank Travis again for taking the time to sit down and talk with me. In next week's episode, I'll be talking to my good friend and traveling buddy Randy Alley about his various experiences in the martial arts, of course, but also his time during Vietnam and his experiences running a skydiving school. Hope you guys tune in for that one. Thanks.